These evening sessions are going to be devoted to the compassion wing of the practice, which of course is one of the foundation or preliminaries for the Mahamudra practice. And so what we've seen so far in the text is that to enter into the Mahayana vehicle in general, and then as a basis for Mahamudra practice, we need to cultivate this aspiration of bodhicitta, the aspiration for enlightenment for the welfare of others. So this is, we saw the entry point and the central pillar for the Mahayana. So this is the compassion wing at that level. But of course, we need a basis for being able to develop this aspiration of bodhicitta. And so for the next few evenings, we'll go through some of the foundation practices, the basis practices for then cultivating that aspiration of bodhicitta. And the basis practices are often referred to as the four immeasurables. And these are four qualities that we are trying to cultivate towards immeasurable sentient beings, towards all living beings: loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. And we'll be going through each one of those in the coming evenings, and doing a practice related to that. So this evening I'd like to begin with loving kindness. So I'd like to begin by doing a little loving-kindness meditation to cultivate loving-kindness for ourselves and others. And then I'd like to explain a little bit more about loving-kindness and briefly touch on the others as well before we finish this evening. So first, let's start with a short meditation. As an act of loving kindness for yourself, allow your awareness to descend into the body, simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. And using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Setting the body into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Vigilance here, of course, means to keep the back nice and straight. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. settling the mind in a state of ease and relaxation. Letting go of any hopes or fears, worries or concerns. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Loving kindness is the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness and its causes. We can begin by cultivating loving kindness for ourselves and then expanding that out to include others. So again, the mental afflictions in our mind, such as anger and jealousy and craving and so forth, are not part of the nature of the mind. They are merely covering the surface of the mind. Underneath these mental afflictions is the natural purity of our mind, our Buddha nature. So imagine this deepest dimension of your mind in the form of a small, white, radiant sphere of light in the center of your chest at the level of your heart. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if I had happiness and its causes. May I be truly well and happy. And then with each out-breath, imagine immeasurable rays of light radiating out from the sphere of light at your heart, filling and saturating your entire body and mind. Imagining that the light transforms into everything you need to be happy. So with each out-breath, breathe out the light of loving kindness, sending to yourself whatever you need to be happy. And then imagine that you've now found the genuine happiness that you seek. Take delight in this. And just as you desire to be happy, so does everyone else. So next bring to mind someone close to you, a loved one. And picture them very clearly in front of you. And arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they had happiness and its causes. May you be truly well and happy. And then with each out-breath, imagine immeasurable rays of light radiating out from your heart, filling and saturating their entire body and mind. Imagining it transforms into everything they need to be happy. So again, with each out-breath, breathe out the light of loving kindness, sending to them whatever they need to be happy. Imagine that they've now found the true happiness that is their heart's desire. And take delight in this. And then allow your field of loving kindness to expand out to the person seated next to you. They are just like yourself in wanting to be happy and to be free of suffering. So again, arouse the aspiration. How wonderful it would be if they had happiness and its causes. May you be truly well and happy. And with each out-breath, imagine rays of light radiating out from your heart, filling their body and mind, and transforming into everything they need to be happy. So with each out-breath, breathe out the light of loving kindness. imagine that they've now found the genuine happiness that they seek. And take joy in this. And allow your field of loving kindness to expand out further. And allow your mind to move around. And whoever comes to mind, whether it's a friend, a stranger, or someone even who you find a little bit difficult, bring them to mind. Attend to them. Breathing out the light of loving kindness, sending them whatever they need to be happy. Allow your mind to continue to move around. And whoever comes to mind, whether it's an individual or even a group of people, attend to them. Breathing out the light of loving kindness, sending to them whatever they need to be happy. No matter how much light is sent out, it is sent out from an inexhaustible source that is in no way depleted. So continue to allow your mind to move around, breathing out the light of loving kindness towards whoever comes to mind. So as a basis for the compassion wing within the Mahayana, within this Mahamudra practice, we can engage in these four practices here, the four immeasurables, cultivating these four qualities towards immeasurable, or in other words, all living beings. So we'll briefly look at each one now, and then I want to make a few more comments about the first practice, the one we've done this evening. Loving kindness is a translation of the Sanskrit word maitri, or the Pali word metta. And again, it's simply the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness and its causes. Compassion in Sanskrit and Pali is karuna. And compassion, the measurable compassion, simply is the wish for ourselves and others to be free of suffering and its causes. Empathetic joy in Sanskrit and Pali is mudita. And empathetic joy is a rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good fortune. And this is something I think particularly important in our modern society, because we have this tendency to always focus on the negative. So we end up with a biased view towards ourselves and others, always just focusing on the negative. So of course this is focusing on the positive qualities of ourselves and others, and it's rejoicing in those things, which also is very helpful to overcome jealousy, because normally when we see someone else having more than us, then we become jealous. So this is also a very good antidote to jealousy. And lastly, equanimity in Sanskrit is upeksha, in Pali upekha. And equanimity is an unbiased, impartial attitude towards others. Now, of course, we tend to have a very biased attitude towards others. And we tend to have an attitude towards others depending on how they affect us. Those people around us who seem to support me in my happiness, we often call our friends. Those people around us who don't seem to affect me in my happiness any way, we often call them the so-called strangers. We don't know them very well. And those people around us who seem to interfere with me and my happiness and maybe even cause me suffering, we usually label the so-called enemy. So we tend to categorize people simply from the perspective of how they affect me and my happiness. And then to the group that we've labeled friend, because they seem to be the source of our happiness, we tend to develop a lot of attachment to them. To the group that we've labeled stranger, simply because they don't seem to affect us in any way, often we develop a lot of apathy and indifference to them. We couldn't care less what happens to them. And then to the group we labeled enemy, on the basis they seem to be interfering with our happiness, maybe even seem to be the source of our suffering, we often develop a lot of aversion, hostility, anger and hatred towards them. So we end up with attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, hostility, anger, hatred to difficult people. Equanimity is about overcoming this biased attitude. So equanimity is to have an equal attitude towards others, based on the idea that, of course, we all are in the same situation. We're all struggling to be happy, to be free of suffering. We're all equal in this regard. And through this line of reasoning and contemplation, we can develop a sense of closeness to everyone, understanding that we're all stuck in the same situation. So this is what equanimity is about. So this evening, I'd just like to comment a little bit more about the first one, loving kindness, and then the following couple of evenings we'll cover the other three of the four immeasurables. Now, with particularly loving kindness and compassion, it's very much recommended to cultivate these in stages. And often in the text they talk about first cultivating loving kindness and also compassion towards people who are close to us, because it's most easy. Then we can expand that slowly out to people who we don't know very well. And once we're comfortable with those people, slowly start to expand it out to people who we find a little bit difficult. And then eventually expand it out to all living beings. But as I think already briefly mentioned, it's in our modern society, there's often good to add an extra step at the beginning. And that is to cultivate loving kindness and compassion toward ourselves. That's something that's often not mentioned so much in the text, because I think historically people tended to feel okay about themselves. But I think in our modern society that's often not the case. Often in our modern society we feel very bad about ourselves. We have often low self-esteem and even self-hatred. So if we're not kind and compassionate to ourselves, we're not going to be able to extend that out to others. So therefore, with both of these practices, it's particularly if we find that we're not feeling very good about ourselves, very good to start cultivating loving kindness and compassion to ourselves first, and then expand it out to others. Now, here, loving kindness, we need to distinguish this from attachment. And there's often a lot of confusion here, because in Buddhism we talk a lot about attachment being a mental affliction and we need to eliminate it. But then when it comes into relationships with others, then it seems like there's a contradiction here. On the one hand, we're supposed to be developing loving kindness to everyone, but on the other hand, we're supposed to be giving up attachment. And it seems somehow like that doesn't work. That if we give up attachment to others, we won't be able to have any relationship or connection to anyone else. And part of the problem here is simply the word attachment. And this is a classic example of how terminology often creates a lot of confusion. Particularly here, because this word attachment in psychology is a very often used word. And often in psychology, you know, we talk about attachment theory and that we need to develop healthy forms of attachment, things like the strong bond between mother and child. We need to cultivate that. And that's referred to as a healthy form of attachment. Of course, there are unhealthy forms we need to eliminate, but there are certain forms of attachment that are actually necessary and we need to cultivate. But then in Buddhism, we hear that, no, all attachment is harmful. We need to eliminate all attachment 100%. So then it seems like psychology and Buddhism are sort of arguing a bit. But here, it's mostly because of the term, the word attachment. So in psychology, when the word attachment is used in the context of developing a strong bond between mother and child, that strong bond between mother and child is not necessarily attachment in Buddhism. In fact, in Buddhism, we need to have a strong bond or connection with everybody. So just because we have a strong connection with someone doesn't mean we have attachment, as it's defined in Buddhism. Because attachment in Buddhism is simply defined as a mental factor that sees its object as attractive. It exaggerates the object's attractiveness and then wishes to possess and hold the object. Why? Because attachment believes that object is a source of our happiness. And so then in terms of a relationship, then what we find is actually there's a mixture that in a relationship, we have both elements normally. We have loving kindness, meaning we have a genuine wish for them to be happy. But mixed in with that, we often have attachment. And loving kindness here in a relationship is simply the wish for them to be happy. And of course, the fine print there is without expecting anything in return, what we would call unconditional love, no strings attached love. Conditional love or strings attached love is love polluted by attachment. And that sounds like this: I will love you as long as, and here comes the condition, as long as you keep saying and doing things that make me happy, I'll love you that long. If you stop doing that, I'm going to stop loving you. That's attachment speaking. So attachment is all about me, 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 and my happiness. And in a relationship, attachment sees the other person as an object to satisfy me. So to really be able to easily distinguish love and attachment, love is saying, I want you to be happy. Attachment is saying, I want you to make me happy. So therefore, we need to be able to distinguish these two elements, increase the love or loving kindness part, and decrease the attachment part as much as possible to have a more healthy relationship. And often then here, we hear in Buddhism, as we, in fact, in terms of immeasurable loving kindness, you'll hear things like, we should love everyone equally. And then also people have some strange idea about what that means. And again, part of the problem here is the word. Because the word love in our English language is definitely an emotion, and it usually implies some sort of intimate behaviour. Whereas maitri or metta does not imply intimate behaviour, and it's not even an emotion. Maitri or metta is an aspiration, it's a wish. It's a wish or an aspiration for ourselves and others to be happy. So when Buddhism says we are to love everyone equally, we're not saying we need to spend equal time with everyone and behave in the same way to everyone. That would be a disaster. Loving everyone equally means to develop the equal attitude, equally wishing everyone to be happy. How that loving kindness will be expressed will be completely dependent on our relationship to the person. With our partner, we would express that loving kindness in probably a quite intimate way and spend a lot of time with them. We would express that same loving kindness to our family members in a different way and probably spend less time with them. And we can express that same loving kindness to our neighbours and work colleagues in a very different way and probably spend hardly any time with them. So we're just talking about the equal attitude. Otherwise, we have some strange ideas. Any questions on that?
Is there a word in Tibetan for attachment?
There is. It's called derchak.
Does it mean attachment or something?
Yeah, I can't remember the actual literal thing, but again, it's the Tibetan words tend to be very precise in their meaning. And again, part of the problem here is terminology, because also we have another word similar that creates a lot of confusion, and that's the word desire. And often, you know, in the Theravada tradition, well, in all of the Buddhist traditions, we talk about three main mental afflictions: ignorance, the ignorance of reality, attachment, and aversion. Or sometimes instead of aversion, they list anger, because there's a strong type of aversion. These are the three core mental afflictions. And of course, the underlying mental afflictions is ignorance. That's the root of all mental afflictions. But the reality is that in our daily life, the mental affliction that pervades our life is attachment. It's very pervasive in our life. It's very hard to do anything without any slight bit of attachment. So attachment is very pervasive in our life. So much so that in the Theravada tradition, often instead of saying that ignorance is the root of suffering, you'll often see in the Theravada traditions, the source of suffering is craving, attachment, desire. Technically, it's actually ignorance causes that, but at a practical level, that's true. At a practical level, that's the driving force in our life. You know, in Buddhism, this world we live in is often called the desire realm, because the main dominant factor, the driving force in our life, is desire, craving, attachment. But again, this word desire, we have to be careful with. Because here, then, what I'm just talking about, desire isn't just another word for attachment. But sometimes that word desire is used in a different way. Again, in the bodhicitta, which we've briefly touched on already, bodhicitta, this aspiration for enlightenment, for the welfare of others, sometimes you'll find the definition of that translated into English as the desire for enlightenment for the welfare of others. Are we supposed to have attachment for enlightenment? No. So the word desire there is meaning aspiration. So again, we have to be very careful when we see these words, because often they're very vague in meaning. But in general, in Buddhism, when you see the word desire, it's just another word for attachment or craving. Any other questions about loving kindness versus attachment?
Is there any method to eliminate the attachment from our relationships and just to live loving kindness in them?
I mean, that's, of course, the ideal result. And what we need to remember, of course, is that it's not like we're going to get rid of attachment by next week. That's not going to happen. By the time we've eliminated attachment 100%, we're out of samsara. We're in either nirvana or enlightenment. So attachment's not something that we can sort of get rid of overnight. So if we have that expectation, then we're going to get frustrated. But what we are to try to do, of course, is that in any interactions with others, is to understand that often there's these two dynamics, the loving kindness, wishing them to be happy, and attachment, seeing them as a source of our happiness. We need to distinguish these two, and as much as possible, reduce the attachment bit and increase the loving kindness, and then our relationships will improve. But this is a thing that we're going to need to do for the rest of our life. It's not like goodbye attachment tomorrow, you know, it's not going to happen. So we need to be realistic about it. But the more effort we put, then of course the better our relationships will be in general.
What's the difference between a wish and that form of desire?
Yeah. So wish just means aspiration. So of course, there can be healthy and unhealthy aspirations. If we aspire or wish for something that's harmful, then that's not a very good aspiration, you know. Or we wish that they suffer, you know, that's not a very healthy aspiration.
It's the same thing, but only the different degree.
No.
Like, what would strong wish is a desire.
No. Well, it depends how you use the word desire. But if we say the word attachment, then we need to have a wish or an aspiration for positive things. Otherwise, we have no driving motivation to move forward. You know, we have to have an aspiration to improve ourselves, to strive for certain good goals. Otherwise, we don't go anywhere. So we need that driving force. But attachment is all about wanting the result now. I want it now, craving that thing. I've got to have it now. So that's what we need to eliminate. So we understand the goal or what we're aspiring to and then work towards it. If we allow craving and attachment to pollute that aspiration or wish, we're going to get blocked. So actually we need to have, and here's another word that often creates confusion, is passion. You know, often people, when Buddhism says eliminate attachment, desire, craving, then people think, oh, my life is going to be, I'm going to be like a vegetable. I'm just going to sort of sit there and do nothing. I'm not going to have any passion. I'm not going to have any drive. I'm not going to have any aspirations. That's completely not true. In fact, we need to develop these healthy aspirations and passions, but we need to get rid of the polluting element of craving and attachment. So these are two very different things, and the more that we have craving and attachment, the more we'll be blocked from actually achieving that result. So even having craving and attachment for enlightenment is an obstacle. It's going to block us. So we also need to let go of that and have a healthy aspiration to strive for that goal. No, but I mean, craving and attachment is this clinging, holding on to something. And it's usually on the basis of that thing is going to make me happy. Whereas an aspiration for some worthwhile goal doesn't have that built into it. Okay. Anything else? The practice, the loving kindness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's difficult for me to when we get to the point, imagine, like it was an instruction to imagine first that I am happy. Like, what does it mean to imagine you are happy? I can imagine, like, I can imagine some visual thing, like, I can visualize, for example, but I can't even imagine I have a toothache, for example, or something like that. Well, I have an idea of what does it mean, but when I try to imagine I have a toothache, like, I don't feel any pain now, and I can, like, imagine, so it's only word.
Sure.
What to, and then it gets to some more difficult, and, like, more complex things like happiness, so even the superior form of happiness, it just works.
Mm. And if we leave them as just words, then they won't have any impact.
Yes, and it doesn't.
That's right.
Meditation never have any, like, I don't see any result now.
Well, then we need to change the way we do the meditation, because there's no point in doing this sort of meditation mechanically. Because it'll just have no effect, and we're just going to get frustrated and annoyed at having to do this meditation.
Imagine other persons happy, like when I can't imagine myself being happy. So what talk about, you know, when it comes to imagining others and all the world and all those worms and
So remember here, the happiness that we're talking about is not pleasure. It's genuine happiness. And genuine happiness is a state free of mental afflictions.
Even more difficult.
No, because sometimes we don't have so many mental afflictions in our mind. Our mind is quite calm and peaceful. Don't you? Don't you sometimes have a mind that's a little bit calm and peaceful? And you feel a little bit contented? And you feel a bit contented? Then just remember those occasions and understand that genuine happiness is that all the time. That state of contentment and peace. That is genuine happiness. And so we have little taste of that experience in our life, so we can relate to that and imagine that genuine happiness is that multiplied many times. So we have some we can imagine something because it's based on our experiences, our past experiences.
But I can't just, this moment now, I can't just repeat that experience. Like, I can't reproduce it right now. Maybe it happened sometimes in my life, but, well, I can't feel it now the same way I can feel, I don't know, a lot of experiences I've had before. And I can't recreate it right now at the very moment. So just that, those only memories, like, they are very transparent, like, okay, I experienced one thing. I don't know.
But don't you ever, when you sometimes remember something pleasant from the past, don't you, when you remember that, don't you sometimes have some joy when you remember it? Or is that memory just some, it doesn't have any effect? If you remember some good experience from the past, do you sometimes then, when you have that memory, do you have some joy?
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. That's exactly what I'm saying. So you are experiencing something from the past. It's not just some mechanical remembering and there's no effect. So in that way, we can relate to those experiences and then have joy at those experiences, understanding that the genuine happiness is that sort of experience magnified.
So in any case, when you are doing this meditation,
sure,
you have to try to reproduce the feeling, reproduce the experience, reproduce the feeling.
Is to, well, of course, if it's just some intellectual idea, then it doesn't have any effect. So all, particularly these sorts of compassion meditations, they're not really, like in the Vipassana meditation, we are coming to some new insight. In compassion meditation, we're coming to some new experience, some new positive state of mind. So if we turn these sorts of meditations into some sort of intellectual exercise, then of course they're not going to work, because they're not meant to be some sort of intellectual exercise. They are meant to, through reflecting on certain points, to evoke some sort of experience, to evoke some experience of loving kindness, to evoke some experience of compassion, and then to hold that experience. That's what these sorts of meditations are about, to cultivate those qualities. Okay, let's finish there this evening then. And then tomorrow evening we're going to look at the second of these, the compassion practice. So this evening again, we're, like every evening, we're going to finish by doing the corpse posture meditation for 15 minutes. So again, lying flat on your back, feet slightly apart, the hands slightly away from the body, with the palms facing upwards. Allowing your awareness to descend into the body. Becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. softening and relaxing all the muscles in the face. Mouth and jaw soft and relaxed. All the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. Not trying to regulate the breath in any way. And with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, happily releasing them. Simply allowing the mind to rest in the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Maintaining that ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. relaxing and releasing any thoughts on the out-breath, focusing on the in-breath. conclusion, we can dedicate all the positive potential we've gathered through our time together here today towards the goal of overcoming suffering and finding genuine happiness. And we can expand that out to include others, also dedicating towards helping those around us overcome suffering and finding genuine happiness. And it's often traditional as part of the dedication to recite a dedication prayer. So while I read out a dedication prayer from the great Indian master Shantideva, you might like to reflect on the words. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Start by bending the left knee and then slowly rolling over to your right side, and then using both your hands to help push yourself up into a seated posture. So that's all for today. So have a nice evening, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. So Tet will again see you, of course, at 6:15 for the stretching, and then 6:45 we'll start the shamatha practice, and tomorrow we're going to be focusing on the breath at the nostrils. It'll be the main focus tomorrow morning. Okay. Have a nice evening. See you in the morning.